Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the a2 Milk Company Limited conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. David Akers, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining this call at short notice. On the line today, we have our Managing Director and CEO, David Bortolussi, and Chief Financial Officer, Race Strauss. David and Race will make a few introductory remarks, and then we'll take questions. Let me hand over to David.
Thank you, David, and good morning, everyone. This morning, we released a statement providing a trading update and a revised outlook for this financial year. Ordinarily, we'd have Peter Nathan joining our investor call. However, as you will have seen, we have also separately announced that Peter has resigned from his role as Chief Executive, Asia Pacific. He will remain with the business for some time to ensure a smooth and orderly transition. I wanted to acknowledge the enormous contribution Peter has made to developing the a2 brand and driving the growth of our business over more than a decade. Notwithstanding our current challenges, we shouldn't lose sight of the value that Peter and team have created. He will certainly leave the business a lasting legacy. On behalf of the whole team at a2, I wanted to say thank you to Peter for everything he has done for the company. Before I get into our announcement, I also wanted to say that I appreciate that this trading update will be difficult news for our investors and analyst community after several downgrades this financial year. I hope that our investors understand and support the need for us to take these more aggressive actions to enable the company to return to growth as soon as possible. So moving on to our announcement. As you know, the first half was challenging for a2, and like many businesses, it has been impacted by significant demand and supply volatility related to COVID-19, which has impacted our IMF business. In February, we outlined the actions that we were taking in the second half to address the challenges we are facing, particularly in the Daigou and CBEC channels. We also indicated that we needed a significant uplift in sales from the third quarter into the fourth quarter. While our third quarter was broadly in line with plan, it is clear that the actions taken to address challenges in the Daigou and CBEC channels will not result in sufficient improvement in pricing, sales, and inventory levels to meet our previous guidance based on April sales being well below plan. More specifically, the actions that have been taken have had the following impacts. Firstly, temporary support to the Daigou customers and reducing sales and inventory in the CBEC channel has had limited impact to date. Secondly, inventory traceability and distribution innovation will have a delayed benefit over a longer period. In addition, a comprehensive inventory review has been undertaken, and this work has indicated that channel inventory is significantly higher than anticipated. As a result of our inventory review, it is clear that the challenges in the Daigou reseller and CBEC channels have been exacerbated by excess inventory and difficulties with visibility. In the interest of the long-term health of the a2 brand and the medium-term trading outlook for our business, more aggressive actions to address excess and aging inventory will now be taken, which will impact FY 2021 revenue and EBITDA and potentially the first quarter of next year. The inventory management actions being taken will provide a2 consumers with the freshest product and benefit our customers, distributors, and partners. I'll now hand over the call to Race to provide a few comments on our trading update.
Thanks, David, and good morning, everyone. As you've seen in the announcement today, we've provided a trading update for the third quarter 2021. Our third quarter was broadly in line with plan, with sales of 295 million. However, April was well below. Infant nutrition sales in the ANZ segment were 99.5 million, and in the CBEC channel were 22.1 million for the third quarter. This represents an 11% and 57% respective decline on second quarter 2021, and a 56% and 77% respective decline on third quarter 2020. This was in line with the revised plan for the period. The reduction in sales in the CBEC channel versus second quarter 2021 was a result of the actions taken to reduce inventory levels and was an integral part of the strategy to stabilize the channel. Sales were down overall versus third quarter 2020 for the same reason. And importantly, we were cycling a substantial increase in sales in the prior year due to COVID-related pantry stocking. Our China label business continues to deliver strong sales, with $98 million recorded for third quarter 21, representing 4.9% growth on the prior corresponding period. This reduced rate of growth relative to the prior year is reflective of the substantial uplift in third quarter 20 due to COVID-related pantry stocking. Compared to the second quarter this year, China label sales declined 18%. The rate of decline relative to the second quarter was mainly due to the unwinding of distributor inventory that was being held to mitigate the risk of the potential of a second wave of COVID-19 in China in the first half. We increased our store count to 22,600 stores in China, and our 12-month rolling market share value in mother and baby stores is stable at 2.4% at the end of March. We continue to invest behind the brand in China, including a significant marketing campaign that is being undertaken in fourth quarter 21. We are further stepping up our digital marketing in fourth quarter and into the first quarter 22 to stimulate consumer demand. Our liquid milk business in Australia continued to perform strongly in third quarter 21, and the change in pricing approach in the US continues to be effective, which is encouraging. I'll hand the call back over to David to discuss our inventory review.
Thanks, Rose. I'll make a few more detailed comments on the inventory review that we've completed. We've undertaken a comprehensive inventory review over the past couple of months, and this work has indicated that levels of channel inventory are significantly higher than had been anticipated. This relates to both the level of excess and the ageing thereof, particularly in English label, which is and will further impact our competitive position over time. Accordingly, we've decided that in the interest of the long-term health of our brand and the business's medium-term trading outlook, more aggressive actions to address excess and aging inventory will now be taken. We've listened to our major customers and distributors and will support them by significantly improving the freshness of our inventory, which is particularly important from a consumer point of view. We'll move forward several months in our inventory dating, subject to supply constraints, and we'll support our majors through undertaking a targeted inventory swap program where excess inventory is later dated than our own. This will be subject to feasibility, allocations and appropriate controls. In parallel, we will be more aggressively rebalancing inventory in the channel to targeted levels by reducing our sales in May and June and potentially into the first quarter to enable inventory to turn faster through the channel and to maintain freshness for our consumers. These actions mean that we'll need to incur a further stock provision of approximately $80 to $90 million on top of the $23 million stock provision recognised in the first half. We're exploring various options to implement additional systems and processes to improve channel inventory visibility and demand and supply planning. I'll hand the call over to Ray to provide a few comments on our outlook.
Thanks, David. A few key points on our outlook. Firstly, revenue. We now anticipate group revenue for FY21 in the order of $1.2 to $1.25 billion. The significant decline from the outlook provided in February reflects the impact of, firstly, the further actions we are now taking to rebalance inventory levels in the trade, and secondly, the reduction in sales offtake expected in Q4 compared to our prior forecast. With regards to EBITDA margin, in terms of the EBITDA margin for the full year, we now expect it to be in the order of 11 to 12%. This is excluding the MVM acquisition costs. The lower EBITDA margin outlook from that provided in February reflects reduced sales in fourth quarter 21, an additional stock provision of $80 to $90 million, as David just mentioned, and one-off costs of $8 million associated with the implementation of our new ERP system. The vast majority of these expenses are non-cash. We are not expecting an immediate recovery in FY22. but we do anticipate that the actions we are taking in fourth quarter 21 will enable us to return to growth during next year. It is important to recognise that the revised forecast does not reflect the underlying performance of the business. The board and management have determined that it is appropriate to address the inventory imbalances aggressively in order to allow the business to return to growth as quickly as possible and deliver acceptable margins. We estimate that if the one-off charges and sales constrictions were backed out for this year, the business would record annual revenues in the order of $1.3 billion, with an EBITDA margin percent in the low to mid-20s. And with that, I'll hand back to David.
Thanks, Ray. The last two items I'd like to touch on are the strategic review process we've commenced and the capital management options are being considered. We recognise that the China infant nutrition market structure is changing rapidly. While the premiumisation trend is continuing, market growth is being impacted by a more pronounced decline in birth rates. The shift towards China label infant nutrition continues. The rate of new product innovation has ramped up, channels to market are changing, and competitive intensity is increasing. It is also clear that the Daigou channel has been cyclically impacted by COVID-19 and regulatory and other structural factors. The company needs to evolve its channels to market and brand marketing programs that have benefited in the past from a highly engaged Daigou network. We recognise that we need to change our approach and have recently commenced the process to review our growth strategy, primarily focused on the China IMF market, including brand, product and channel strategy to drive consumer demand, for the purpose of realising the full potential of our business. We'll provide an update on this at an investor day post the full year results and ahead of our annual meeting in November. Regarding capital management opportunities, the company's balance sheet remains strong. The board is confident in the strength of the brand, the underlying fundamentals of the business and our long-term growth potential. We're actively reviewing capital management initiatives, including a potential share buyback, and we'll provide an update on this at the full year results in August. Thanks, David. Back to you.
Thanks, David. We'll open up the call for Q&A. To those asking questions, please limit themselves to two questions and then rejoin the queue. Ashley, can you please assist?
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star two. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from David Errington with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Good morning, David. Race, although I'd like to say good morning, but I don't know if that's the right phrase. David, can I just elaborate your strategy? What you're going to do in this inventory is that you're basically going to slow your sales down further in May and June, and then just swap the inventory that you've got, swap it with fresher product. Is that correct? So you're just swapping aged inventory, so the actual level of inventory is going to remain the same. Is that effectively what you're going to do?
Close. I'll just add to that, David. So there's two problems we have is the level of inventory in the channel and the aging thereof. Mm. So the level will be addressed through proactively slowing down our sales in the fourth quarter. We hope that that'll address it, but it may drag into the first quarter. And on the aging, we've made a decision to write off a large amount of our inventory, $80 to $90 million, which will take us forward in our dating. At the moment, for example, on English label, we're still selling July stock in the market from last year. So we will take the hit on that, but with our customers and distributors, we'll work with them such that if their inventory, which will obviously be later data than that, if we're writing off inventory which is fresher ourselves, we will work with them to swap that inventory out where that's practical for them. So it allows them to move forward in their dating profile as well. So we minimise the gap in the market between what we will sell in the future and what they currently have. So there's two things we're doing. It's reducing the level of inventory so that it flows better in the future. And secondly, working, with our distributors and customers to freshen up their inventory as well. Now, we can't do anything at retail, obviously, in store and online, et cetera, and with the Daigou channel. But, hopefully that'll flow through quicker because the ultimate inventory in the channel at retail should hopefully turn through in the next month or two.
As part of that first question, David, you've basically highlighted that it's going to be the fourth quarter and it could go into the first quarter. This could take a lot longer unless, I mean, it just seems like you're still trying to manage your way through it. This could take well into, you know, a long time. you basically highlighted it as a 3 to 6, you've been calling out that it's a 3 to 6 month thing, but it's just going to keep lingering. I can't see how this is going to have an immediate impact.
The ultimate impact on channel confidence and pricing and demand, et cetera, may take a little longer, David, but the time that it's going to take to address the inventory levels should be largely impacted in the fourth quarter and a little bit in the first quarter. Because that's in our control to address that. We've got a much better handle on the level of inventory in our kind of first level and to some extent second level distributors now. So that should mainly address that. What is uncertain to us is, you know, for example, in the Daigou channel is, you know, there are multiple holding points and routes to market after the corporate Daigous that we deal with. So that's where the visibility becomes more challenging and we've made certain estimates in relation to that. So that's the level of uncertainty we have there. But in the, say, for example, the CVEC channel and NBS and Dole, we have much higher levels of visibility now. So I'm reasonably confident that we should be able to address the levels pretty quickly. The aging, we're just going to have to, we haven't done this to this extent in the past, and that's just going to take us a little while operationally and practically to work with our customers and distributors as to what extent we can actually freshen up their inventory as well. With inventory that we would otherwise be writing off, we'd like to explore with them how we can move them forward as well.
Okay, and the second question that I've got is sort of like a follow-on to this too, but this is my second question. David, you've been in the business now 3 or 4 months and you've got great experience working with brands that are under massive pressure. In your assessment now as the new CEO, do you believe that you can do all of this without material damage to the A2 brand, particularly the English label brand? And I read with interest that you're looking to put prices up in the English label to protect the brand premiumisation and to cover COGS. I mean, that just seems to be really, really strange move, although I understand why you'd like to do it, but to put prices up in this current environment, I know there's a couple of prompt answers to that. I mean, there'd be questions everywhere on this, but do you really think that that's the right thing to do? I mean, I suppose you do because you wouldn't be doing it otherwise, but it just seems a really strange thing to do at this point.
David, I think that, look, the brand is, as far as we can tell based on our brand tracking, the brand is in good health in terms of absolute measures as well as relativity. I mean, I'm keen to see after our marketing campaign, we've got a big campaign in market in the fourth quarter, and we normally get an improvement following that, so I'm keen to see the brand tracking results after that. In terms of managing our way through this, you know, we're taking pretty significant steps to address the supply side, supply issues that we have. We still need to work on the demand side. Because clearly our English label business in the Daigou channel is still declining. So we need to work on the demand side, and what we're doing with that at the moment is investing heavily in our marketing programs in markets. So it's over $40 million spend there this quarter, which we're increasing by, you know, further by, you know, in the order of $5 to $10 million over the next quarter and a bit. We will increase our marketing investment in the future because the Daigou channel, we benefited for years from the level of, you know, activity, the efficiency that, you know, thousands of Daigou have had in the market in building our brand successfully in the past. We're going to need to ramp that up. In terms of the longer-term growth, that will be the subject of our strategic review that we're doing, which will come back to the market before the general meeting. Price increases, you know, the view that the team has is that by moving forward in the dating and addressing these issues, there's an opportunity to increase the price to restore confidence. I know it sounds odd, but restoring confidence in the channel by pricing into the market and lifting that, you know, across both Daigou and CVEC. And it doesn't necessarily, the view is that it doesn't necessarily, you know, follow the normal kind of demand and supply, you know, elasticity sort of concept. So it's slightly different in terms of the positioning of the brand in China. It's important to maintain our premium pricing.
Thank you, David. Thanks for the answers. Excellent.
No, I appreciate it.
Your next question comes from Chelsea Leadbetter with Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and morning, team. I guess just expanding on the inventory question a bit further, you know, you've obviously done a bit of review yourselves now and, you know, changed your systems a little bit. But I guess I'm just trying to understand, you know, David, from your experience in this business, which I appreciate short-lived at this point, but, I mean, do you feel like you've actually got a good enough visibility here to, I guess, commit to the market that 80 to 90 mil is enough of a provision? I guess what I'm trying to understand here is the risk that, you know, in 3 months' time or something, that we end up with needing to buy back more inventory or kind of having to manage this situation more aggressively further?
Yeah, Chelsea, it's a good question. Like, the information's not perfect, but we have, over the last couple of months, like, really tried to get as much as we can and piece it all together and look at the inventory flows, the current state, actually, plus kind of a forward-looking perspective as well at different levels in the trade. And this business is more complicated than most FMCG businesses. Like, there's multiple levels in certain aspects of the channel, so it does make it more challenging. But I do feel like we have a much better handle on it now. And what's going to be important in the future is, you know, the supply side is much easier for us to manage, obviously. The demand assumptions that we've made are modest. So I think we've worked through it with the team's done a great job in really diving into this and working through it carefully. And I think the 80 to 90 million is an appropriate level. And I think, you know, I'll never say never, but I would hope that it's highly unlikely that we'd have to come back with any further adjustments to our inventory position in the near term.
Okay, and I mean, for my second question for now, just on the China label assumptions, I appreciate you've given us some clarity on what's happened and why the third quarter growth hasn't been as strong. I'm just trying to understand what you've put into your thought process for the fourth quarter. You know, is there sort of, I guess, situation of increasing distributor inventory, et cetera, has that kind of worked its way through now? Should we expect that sort of channel to return to the growth rates that we've seen, or is that going to take a bit longer again?
Well, the China label, you know, as you know, the market for the China label domestic business has been growing steadily over time, and it doesn't face as many challenges as the English label business. But there is some level of excess inventory in China as well, so we will be constraining sales a little bit in the fourth quarter as well. So I'll hand over to Race if he's got anything further to add to the quarter assumption.
Hey, Chelsea. Just what we've actually done for the fourth quarter is we've actually held it fairly flat. So, you know, hopefully we would get a little bit better. But in terms of what we've assumed that we will hold May and June fairly flat to actual sales, which is in line with the current consumer offtakes. We have not built in a significant step up at all, even though we are spending significant marketing investment. So it's a fairly flat assumption for the rest of this year.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate the colour.
Your next question comes from Adrian Orban with Jarden. Please go ahead. My apologies. Your next question comes from Larry Gandler with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Nice to meet you, David Ray. I'm fairly new to this stock, so forgive me if this question's a bit naive, but I imagine in the supply chain, you guys would have been planning for growth, may even have capacity already in place for growth. Can you talk to, you know, your supply chain for infant formula, Synlait, and maybe MVM? To what extent will there now be spare capacity, or is there excess capacity, and how do you manage that?
So, Larry, it's a good question. So just a bit of context. So what's happened on the inventory side is last year, because of the volatility in COVID, you know, we ordered a lot more inventory then, and Synlait's been a fantastic partner, and they supplied that, but we haven't been able to actually work our way through that. So that's one of the problems that we've got now. In terms of capacity going forward, you know, all of our product comes out of, on the infant milk side, it comes out of Synlait, you know, fantastic partner for such a long time, and, you know, high quality product, great service, et cetera. The MVM acquisition, though, is more strategic in just recognising the concentration risk that we have with Synlait from a single supplier, single facility, and also that our China label registration is held by Synlait. So it's no concerns over the arrangements and the relationship and the flexibility we get through Synlait. But we have decided to acquire MVM to provide us with dual sourcing going forward over time. It's going to take some time to transition product to there, but we very much intend to have both Synlait and MVM as key suppliers of the business going forward. I think with the, in terms of capacity utilisation, I think overall with the impact on the IMF, particularly the English label business out of New Zealand into China, I would believe that there is, I don't know the exact data on it, I believe there would be some excess capacity in the industry, including, you know, that we're going to have to manage that carefully with Synlait and ourselves with MVM going forward. Hopefully, you know, the market will continue to grow and we will as well, hopefully ahead of market, and we'll absorb that excess capacity in the future.
And with the pool of A2 milk, is that something that you planned for growth and now need to kind of step back? How does that work?
Yeah, we always ensure that we have more than adequate A2 milk pool supply. It's not a, you know, we go through a lot of work and effort to develop those milk pools, and it doesn't cost a lot to actually hold those milk pools in place, and we always make sure our farmers receive an appropriate premium for that. So that's not a, that could be adjusted in the future, but it's not currently part of our plan.
Okay, thanks. And my second question, again, perhaps quite simple here, is what do you do with the inventory that you swap? Is it just destroyed?
Yes, unfortunately, it is destroyed, but we try and do that as sustainably as possible. The each tin is effectively unpacked and decanted, and the contents is reused and the packaging is recycled. So it's unfortunate to be in a situation to do that, but we have to do that because of you know, regulatory and compliance reasons around the product, and also commercially to ensure that it's not you know, resold back into the channels indirectly of what, you know, to address the problem that we are trying to fix.
Okay, thank you, guys. Nice to make your acquaintance.
No problem. Thanks, Larry.
Your next question comes from Sam Teager with Citi. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, David.
Hi, Sam.
G'day. Can you please talk about how you see your prospects on being able to renew your SAMR licence next year?
It's a big process we're going through. We're working very closely with Synlait on that. We're well progressed in our, you know, the product runs that we need to do that, and dossier preparation, and all the work that that you may be aware that needs to be done for that. So we should hopefully be in a position later this year to be lodging that. At this stage, we have, you know, we don't take anything for granted. It's obviously a critical aspect for us going forward, and we believe that we're well positioned to have that renewed. Over time, we'll look to also have MVM registered as well as an integrated facility.
All right, cool. And then can you comment as to why you think the demand for your products have dried up so quickly, and why, you know, what gives you the confidence that with a bit more marketing you can see the demand return? I guess, you know, from our perspective, there seems to be some fundamental consumer changes going on, which could be difficult, you know, for the company just to market its way out of.
Yeah, so, I mean, what's really happened to us, we've actually maintained share in the channels overall, but what's obviously happened to us, the Daigou channel has contracted rapidly. And if anything, we've probably increased share in the channel, but it has gone back significantly. It's probably about 40% down on what it was. So where we have benefited in the past is, you know, so many individual and collective Daigous promoting our brand, and that's where we've struggled, and that's why we've lost without that kind of push from the Daigou channel to consumers. That's why we've lost demand there. The underlying demand for our product on CBEC for English label and also China label through the MBS channel and through domestic online is still robust and solid. The marketing program that we have put in place for the fourth quarter and the additional spend that we're doing is primarily orientated to our China label business, but also has an obvious benefit to our English label business. We'll be working with our Daigou partners to leverage that as much as possible. We'll also in the future will be working with them to generate more content for them to share through their key opinion leaders as well, and to improve their sort of connectivity with the market as well. So there's a lot of work that we need to do, but it's a fair question around ongoing demand for English label. It is a challenge for the business, and we've got a lot of work to do on that.
Thanks. And when you say 40% down on what it was, can you just please clarify what period are you referring to?
If we look at, it's hard to get an exact read on it, but if you look at, say, for example, Kantar reporting on an MAT basis, you'll see, you know, MAT to December or March being down in that order. We've lost a lot of what has been referred to in the past as retail Daigou, but our corporate Daigou is down much lesser than that. So overall, I'd say the market's down sort of in that order.
Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from Marcus Curley with UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just a couple, please. So you've obviously done a lot more work on the channel inventory. Can you actually size, you know, the inventory in the channel for us, and also give us some colour on how much you think you're going to bring that level down by at the end of the financial year?
We haven't been... We don't intend to provide specific guidance on it, but what we're trying to achieve is to get, and we think about our product has a shelf life of 2 years from manufacture. We're trying to get that into consumers with a available at retail, in-store and online around about with 18 months shelf life remaining on the product. It's a little bit different between China label and English label and by channel, but that's what we're trying to achieve. And at the moment, that's not the case. Particularly for English label in various stages and for China label in stage one. So that's what we're trying to achieve. We haven't disclosed the actual level of inventory at different levels in the channel. But in terms of relativities, if you like, there's less inventory and it turns faster in the corporate Daigou channel. Next would be CBEC in terms of level of months of inventory tied up in the channel, both in distributors and platforms. And then lastly, the slowest route to market is the China label business because of just the additional processes and compliance checks and all that that needs to go through. And we go to China State Farmers, our primary distributor there, and then there are another, you know, almost 90 distributors that then distribute to the MBS channel as well. So that's a longer route to market. I hope that helps with the understanding, but we haven't sort of specifically quantified the level of days or months cover coming out of the channel.
How about this, David, how about the second part? You know, are you able to offer a view on how many tins, you know, you've tightened by, you know, this year? So I suppose you refer to in the guidance, you know, that the business, you know, would have a higher level of sales if you weren't doing these tightening efforts. You know, can you give us, you know, some indication of what that quantum is?
Yeah, Marcus, look, you can look at around 90 million in terms of sales. So if you look at the reduction, we previously said we would be 1.4. We now say we'll be between 1.2 and 1.25. We've estimated about the constriction, to use that word, of sales would account for about 90 million of that reduction.
So that's in the order of, you know, 8 or 9 million tins, if you like, from a volumetric point of view, in terms of the...
Sure, and that's the delta with this one. Obviously, these efforts had already started when you lowered your guidance previously. So just, yeah, so is that just incremental? So it's going to, you know, think about how much you've...
It was more incremental in the past, Marcus. It was more focused on the CBEC channel. So we, in the third quarter, we reduced our shipments to help with rebalancing that. So CBEC is less of an issue, but we still have concerns to a lesser extent in CBEC, but particularly in the Daigou and reseller channel, and also within the China label route to market.
And just a point of clarification, when you're saying purchasing back stock from distributors, how is that going to be done?
So we won't be buying back stock. So we're going to move our dating forward. So that means that we will have an obsolescence provision in relation to post-dated stock, which we won't be selling actively in the market. But where our key customers and distributors have older dated stock, then we will work with them to swap that out where it's practical and feasible. So currently, for example, in English label, we're currently selling, say, July stock into the market here, say in corporate Daigou channel. If we move forward towards the end of this year in our dating, if our corporate Daigou, if we're selling July stock now, you would imagine they're sitting on, you know, June, July stock at the moment. If we move forward to later in this year, and if we were going to write off, you know, September, October or November stock, then rather than write off and destroy that stock, we would work with them to see if we can exchange some of their inventory to bring them closer to what we're going to be selling in the future. Does that make sense?
Understood. And could you offer a split between what you think, within the 90 million is, a swap, for distributors versus, just a simple reduction in your own?
Roughly, you look at around sort of 60-30, so 30 coming back.
Well, it's about probably a third we'd probably exchange, and two-thirds may need to be destroyed, obsolete stock. So it's hard to tell. We haven't done, I'll just clarify that or caveat it, we haven't done anything. There have been some swaps in the past, much more incremental than this. We haven't done anything of this scale in the past. So we'll just need to work through that and to see what extent we can actually swap out inventory. Some areas will be easier, some areas might be more challenging. So we need to work our way through that. But in any event, we will move forward our dating, which is what crystallises the obsolescence provision. We just want to move our customers forward as far as possible.
Okay. And then just quickly, can you just give us a view on the sell-out in the China label business in the second half or in the current quarter?
Current quarter, so sell-out, well, Andrew, look, so if you look at Nielsen data and that, you probably think it's a bit volatile in the third quarter, but it's a double-digit number, growth number. If you look at the distributor offtake number, that's a mid-single-digit number in terms of distributor offtake for the third quarter.
So distributor offtake sell-in, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, our sell-in in the third quarter. So we actually put that in the release. So that's the 98 million is our sell in. I thought you were asking, that's our sell in. So
sorry, Dave, when you said distributor, I just assumed that was what you were selling to your distributor.
Yeah, so our sell in is, we've clarified the $98 million in the third quarter is our sell into the distributors in China label. I thought you were asking about the offtake beyond that, and I was saying that our distributors offtake volumetrically, we don't get a sales number for them, but what we have been able to clarify through this process is that their offtake in the third quarter is a mid-single digit growth number. And then from a retail point of view, the Nielsen numbers would indicate that the market is in sort of mid to high single digit growth and we're growing ahead of the market.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from Richard Barak with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Can I just follow on with the same line of question about the swapping of the inventory? Which customer types are you actually talking about here? Because I'm just trying to get a sense, presumably you're talking the sort of level one distributors. How far does it extend? Will you include level two? So how deep can you go?
So it's mainly level one. We may explore some level two. So if you think about the corporate Daigou channel, which most of that inventory, there's a fair chunk of that in Australia and New Zealand, but also in China. So we'll explore that with our corporate Daigou customers. In CBEC, we have several distributors in China and Hong Kong, and then they sell to the platforms. So we'll certainly address it at the distributor level. Where there are any pockets of aged stock or excess in the platforms, we may consider that. We just need to work through the practicality of that. And in relation to China label business, our first point of distribution is into our partner, China State Farm, and then that goes to our subsidiary distributors. So we'll look at that second level distributor in China. There's about 90 of those, and we'll explore ways to address any excess and or age inventory with those distributors. Beyond that, there some of our major retail customers have RDCs around China, and then there's obviously stock in individual MBS stores, and we probably won't be going any further than we won't be addressing that. So it'll just go to the distributor level.
And so obviously you've got roughly 30 million in mind to do that. How do you arrive at that number? Is that literally from what you can see? That's the extent of the problem, or is that just how far you can sort of reach?
Well, based on our most recent information, we've gone through at the at all the distributors and got access to the current stock holdings. We've looked at it by English label and China label where that's relevant. We've looked at it by stage and age, and we've looked at and tried to model how far we can move forward with our own inventory and ensure that our distributors aren't shorted by stock, but looking at where we can improve that excess and aging where possible. So we've tried, again, the information is not perfect, but we've got a much better handle over it now, and we're going to work with our customers and distributors to see what we can achieve in the next couple of months.
And Richard, just to be totally clear here, with the Daigou, our visibility extends to our customers who we are selling to. It does not extend beyond that.
Yeah, Daigou's on your first level. Sorry if I wasn't clear about that.
No, exactly. And that's where my question was coming from. So my second question's on in-market pricing. I mean, that's something that we've been watching pretty closely, and I guess that shows you the intersection between supply and demand. Do you have any targets, or certainly targets you're prepared to talk to in terms of pricing? Because certainly from our observations, the pricing that we're seeing for A2 in market today is well down on where it's traditionally been. And
yeah.
I guess, I mean, this goes to the heart of brand health and brand equity, I think. So a sustained period of weak pricing, it worries me that the brand has been permanently damaged here.
Yeah, I understand your concern. I understand your concern.
Do you have something you can share in terms of some targets, perhaps? You know, what is the right price, or what do you think is actually achievable?
Well, yeah, on pricing and the secondary pricing in the market, so CBEC pricing and C2C pricing, et cetera, that is observable, as you'd expect, we track that very closely ourselves. We have been very concerned about where pricing is at the moment, which, as you say, is a clear indicator of demand and supply imbalances. So in terms of where we'd like, now obviously we have no influence over retail pricing, but where we'd like to see it is we'd like to see our English label, Daigou-related C2C pricing, increase to, you can see that as being as low as 130, 140 on C2C platforms like PDD. On Taobao, it's a little bit higher, but we'd like to see that up more closer to the terms of 200 rather than 150 RMB per can. CBEC pricing, we'd like to see it, 200 or more. So it's got a ways to go, but, that's one of the key reasons why that we're actually taking this action, because it is an indicator of demand and supply imbalances in the channel.
So how quickly do you think we can see a response then, David?
Well, it's hard to be definitive on that. I'd hope to see that improving significantly in the first half of next year, possibly as early as the first quarter. I don't know. It hasn't moved to date based on the actions that we have taken, and that's why we're moving more aggressively on this. I am concerned also about the potential impact on brand health, but I must say that brand health measures that we have seen to date have not shown much movement in that regard. So our brand awareness and loyalty through the funnel is still very high. The spontaneous awareness has come off a little bit, but I expect that to improve once the campaign is fully aired in China this quarter. And NPS, our numbers, as far as we can tell, are the highest in the market relative to the competition. So we're not seeing it on the brand health tracking yet. I share your concern about the impact that secondary pricing in the market can have on brand perception in China, and that things can change very quickly. And that's the reason why we're taking this more aggressive action.
All right, great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Andrew McLennan with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Just a couple of quick ones from me. Firstly, just in relation to the strategy and also the fact that you've mentioned the potential for a buyback, I'm just wondering, if you are going to be conducting a buyback, are you sort of inferring that the strategy announcements won't be of a material nature? I'm just wondering, wondering about sort of the full disclosure over that period, if you could just talk through what your expectations are in terms of the strategic objectives and potentially whether or not that will include a sort of a change in manufacturing to within China.
So, Andrew, so what The strategic review that we're undertaking is more focused on driving growth and consumer demand in the market for both China label and English label. So we'll be looking at, you know, all aspects of from consumer back to, you know, brand and product portfolio, product strategy, and our channel mix going forward and how we approach that. So that's the primary focus of it. I said in the announcement that we would also consider other opportunities to maximise the full potential of the business. If we think there are supply areas that we need to, manufacturing capability that we need to address, then we will consider that. So there's no real constraint on the scope of the review, but it will be prioritising growth in China. If that has a material impact on our capital needs going forward, you know, we said that we'd come back at the full year results and give an update. If we thought that was going to be something that might impact our available capital and that it was better to reinvest that capital in the business, then we'd update the market accordingly. At the moment, we think there may be some excess capital versus our current needs, and that we are open to considering, and we are actively considering, the most efficient way to execute any capital management. We've got a little bit more work to do, and we think it's also better practice to do that on the back of full year results so that the market has full information in relation to the company. And as you highlight, it also gives us the opportunity to see how the strategy review project is developing and whether that has an impact.
Okay, thank you. And just in relation to the MBS channel, obviously the Nielsen stats were a touch weaker in terms of their the growth rate over January and February. Obviously that coincides with the sort of the peak conditions this time last year, but also there was a potential for substitution of consumers having to move to the MBS channel that might have previously been using the Daigou channel. But then also there is mention in the market amongst distributors of a change in commercial terms this calendar year. I'm just wondering, when you think about sort of the growth outlook for MBS over the next few quarters, have either of those two, either the substitution into channels or any commercial change in arrangements at the beginning of this year, is that likely to be a factor going forward?
So firstly, on the Nielsen data, it is a bit volatile at the moment, and obviously, you know, Chinese New Year moved around a bit, and the February numbers didn't entirely make sense to us, so it's probably important to look at longer-term MATs on that because of the variability. But on the substitution, I mean, absolutely, there's been a substitution in channel from English label to domestic China label product. You know, we can see that based on certain information that we have in Kantar, et cetera, we can see that English label product is, as you would expect, shifting either to CBEC platforms or to domestic China label business. In terms of the commercial terms, you know, we work with our distributors like all brand owners to try and achieve a, you know, mutually beneficial arrangement with commercial terms that provide the right kind of incentives and constraints around their distribution as well. So I don't think the commercial terms are a big factor. If anything, it should be helping us drive growth going forward. The substitution and the effect of English label moving to China label, that is a real issue that we need to develop our strategy around going forward.
Thanks very much for that. And just as a follow-on or to clarify, you know, what's sort of the nature of the commercial term changes?
I don't think it's probably not appropriate for us to comment on that. We've been incrementally, you know, changing territories and slightly terms as well, but it's nothing out of the ordinary course of business.
Okay, thanks very much.
Your next question comes from Adrian Orbon with Jarden. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, Adrian.
Oh, good. Sorry about that before. Look, I apologise if you covered it and I've missed it, but like, it's obviously been pretty fulsome sort of debate through a couple of common themes. But are you able to kind of give us a sense of like what you think the system is doing on the ground in China at the moment across the channels, and whether you're seeing any significant shifts in terms of the demand areas that the brand's typically been strong in?
Well, I think the macro issues that we're facing is that probably the market is has been impacted by a slower birth rate than we and others might have initially expected. So we saw that come off. So this is impacting overall demand, not necessarily specifically in our segments, but that's probably one of the biggest concerns at the moment. We've seen that come off recently as everybody in the market has. I think actually it may come off even a bit further because of the vaccination process and the guidance that potential mothers are receiving in relation to that. So I think that the birth rate is going to be a challenge in the near term. And it has been declining, you know, structurally for some time. I expect it'll come off a bit, and there might be a cyclical sort of uptick in that as COVID hopefully dissipates and mothers become more confident. But over time, I think that's an area of challenge for us. The other big shift in the market that's obviously going on is the rise and importance of the China label business. We acknowledge that it's increasing in terms of its share of the market overall, and the domestic competition is getting stronger as well. So they're probably the two macro areas that we really need to address going forward.
Okay, thank you. And I guess against that, you're also saying, as the market sort of contracts around those macro factors, like a sort of a push by all the international brands, I guess, into this premiumisation trade, which, you know, includes A2, yeah, Goat, all that sort of stuff. Like, how is that sort of starting to factor in on your thinking in terms of what we might expect, like, as you update us through August,
yeah,
and I guess sometime between August and November?
Yeah, so I think we'll probably share more of this in terms of our strategy going forward, but, you know, English label is a really important part of our business, and there's, you know, we're not going to walk away from that or our channel partners in relation to that. But clearly, China label is the area of focus for the industry going forward. And within that, from a channel point of view, the MBS channel is absolutely critical. And then if you look from a product point of view, you've already highlighted the importance of the ultra premium segment as well, which is the fastest growing segment. Now we need to, so in effect, we compete in the ultra premium segment in the domestic market, primarily in MBS and to a lesser extent in Dole. And then we also compete as a premium brand, the most premium brand really in the premium sector through our English label. Where we don't play at the moment is in that sort of super premium segment in between those, which is largely a domestic China label business. So this is these are areas in the market structure and the opportunities that we have that we're going to need to factor into our strategy going forward. Because we will eventually become limited in terms of the distribution potential of our ultra-premium China label business across the MBS channel into BCD cities where we compete with our English label. So we'll have more to say about that later in the year, but that's some of the thinking that we need to do in terms of developing the long-term potential of our business.
Okay, and then just to be sort of clear on some and what you mentioned there around some of the on the existing China label focus. But when we think about what you've flagged pretty consistently through the document around increasing marketing intensity, are you talking about what's required there from your initial review? Is it more trade investment, or is it more trade investment and more marketing support at the sort of below the sort of in the cash OpEx sort of lines?
Yeah, it's more. Well, it'll be both. It'll be above the line and below the line. We need to, you know, as I said earlier in the call, we've benefited, over many years from the push brand building that we have received from, you know, so many loyal Daigou customers and supporters of the brand, which is incredibly efficient in terms of building the brand. And now with that being impacted by COVID and other factors, we're going to need to supplement that communication with our consumer through more traditional measures. We'll need to increase our level of investment, in particular in terms of marketing mix. We need to review our messaging as well, and we'll look at our marketing mix. We'll move more to digital in orientation, and we need to make sure those campaigns are quite integrated and really at all kind of customer journey aspects, all the touch points along that we're helping our consumers move through the funnel through to purchase and loyalty over time. We don't have a CRM system in place. There's a lot of work that we need to do in that regard going forward. So it's a real area of focus for us, both, you know, from my earlier comments and thinking about our product portfolio strategy going forward, and then thinking about how we communicate that effectively and execute with our consumers.
And sorry, just sort of finally, obviously you've got some leadership changes like Peter's resignation and also the marketing officer.
Mm.
But how do you sort of have you got like a replacement in mind already, which will be part of this kind of review process as we sort of move through the next couple of months, or is that still to take place independently of the review that you're currently doing with the board?
So on the marketing role, so Susan's resignation was announced some time ago before I joined. We have commenced a selection, recruiting and selection process in connection with that. I'm hoping both internal and external candidates are being considered for that, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to update the market on an appointment during the fourth quarter. I'm hoping that's not too far away. We're down to a shortlist in that regard. Peter's announcement is new news. So we weren't planning for that at all. Peter will remain with the business for a while. He's got a decent notice period, and he'll work with us on succession, and we'll look at internal and external candidates in that regard, and we'll review our, in the context of our strategy going forward, we'll review what's the right organisational structure to have in place and also what's the appropriate talent to lead the business going forward. So that's new news. I don't have a plan in relation to that, but we're working on that from today.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your comments.
Your next question comes from Phil Kimber with E&P. Please go ahead.
Okay, guys. Just a question. It seems obviously you've made the point there about the Daigou channel in Australia. I mean, can you give us what your market share has done in Australia from, say, pre-COVID levels? And I'm particularly thinking here, I understand you said that the corporate Daigous have been better, but I'm not sure if you've ever given a split of how much of your ANZ sales, is retail Daigou versus corporate Daigou versus actually Australian consumers.
Well, Race might be able to help you with some of the numbers, Phil, but our domestic consumption in Australia and New Zealand is actually relatively small and immaterial, really, in the scheme of things. When the market was running really strong pre-COVID, there were obviously a lot of sales that went through grocery and pharma that were being indirectly finding their way to China. So that's where that channel in particular was much higher. It's a fraction of what it was, unfortunately, now compared to what it was then. The corporate Daigo channel is a much more modest reduction on where it was previously. So that's sort of the big kind of macro change there. In terms of our share of the Daigou channel, it's really difficult to measure that objectively. All we can look at is the Kantar data, really, which gives you an indication of channel of purchase. And over the, from the beginning of, going back to the start of COVID and sort of, January 20, our overall share has increased through that period to probably midway through calendar 20, and then it's remained relatively stable after that based on the information. And most stages you can kind of cut that data by stage, and most of the stages have followed that same trajectory. So we would, our market share in for the Daigou channel is probably in the order of about, 30%-ish.
And I guess what I'm really going there is, without knowing how much the retail Daigou channel was, should we just assume that goes to zero and it's never coming back?
Therefore,
maybe some of that switches to corporate Daigou, but maybe it doesn't. Yeah. Just trying to understand the big picture.
Yeah, the retail business was almost the same size as the, a bit less than the corporate Daigou channel, but that's a fraction of what it used to be. Call it 10% of what it used to be. It's come down dramatically, Phil.
Right, and then we should assume, in your new numbers, that's gone and never coming back. And, the corporate Daigou as well in Australia, should we assume that, hopefully you can offset that with China Label and CBEC, but, why should the corporate Daigou channel remain over the next 3 or 4 years? Is that really a channel that is going to continue going forward, or should we assume that that's going to wind down as well?
Yeah, so on the retail side, I agree with your comments, and we're not factoring in any improvement in that in our numbers in the near or medium term from COVID going away and students and tourists coming back, et cetera. So we're not factoring any of that in, so we're not assuming that that retail component improves. On the corporate Daigo channel, I appreciate from the market's point of view, it's a pretty opaque area of the market, and we probably, maybe in our strategy session later in the year, we can give you a little bit more colour on how complicated those routes to market are, and there are pockets of quite sophisticated consumer, direct-to-consumer engagement within that. So at the moment, so if you take the third quarter, I haven't got the sort of Kantar data handy, but the offtake from our corporate Daigo customers is down sort of, you know, high single digits, almost 10% in the third quarter. So we've still got work to do to stabilise the corporate Daigo market, but I'm hopeful that we can stabilise that and working with our partners return that channel to growth. So there's some really interesting e-commerce work that they're doing and some O2O work that they're doing over time that'll build our distribution. So I'm hopeful that we can stabilise and turn that around. In terms of overall channel mix, the Daigo channel will still be an important part of our business. It may well end up being less going forward, but not for the want of reducing that. It's hopefully we're able to drive higher growth in our other channels going forward.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
And Phil, just to give you some clarity on those numbers, the retail business in Australia was running at about $250 million last year, and this year it's effectively gone to nothing.
Mm.
So that just gives you the sort of the feel for the pure retail part. Now, of course, when we say retail, we don't know how much of that actually goes out through the Daigo to China. But if you take the view that it has gone to effectively zero for 21, then, of course, it all means it was going out to China. The local market is very, very small.
Yeah. So I think you should be assuming modest growth in China and China label business, and we've got a job to do to stabilise our English label business going forward, and hopefully over the next year or so we'll get the English label business back into growth. But it needs more work, Phil, and we'll give you an update on that. It's not yet stable at the moment, so we've got a job to do.
Yeah, thanks.
Your next question comes from Jonathan Snape with Bell Potter Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, no problem, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks. Look, just one question, if I can. I think you made a comment in there that you're going to cease the Daigo support payments. Was there anything in that third quarter in terms of payments that you made?
In the third quarter?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there's any kind of number that you've already expensed in those Daigo support payments.
There is, Jonathan. It's not a significant amount. It's certainly not material.
Okay.
But there is a little bit that was in the third quarter.
It was targeted support for our corporate Daigo customers in effect in bonus stock or to help with all stages, a little bit more in relation to stage one. It was also helping with clearing excess and aged inventory. So it's not that we want to pull back in supporting our corporate Daigo customers. We're actually just flipping that support from asking them to help us clear aged inventory and excess, but more taking the hit now to move us forward in dating to improve the overall health of the channel and their business as well. So, and hopefully that kind of support is not required going forward in terms of our offer to the market.
And just
great,
to clarify,
but there's no material payments made in this. We won't see any material outflows in this result.
No, but it will have depressed our gross margin during the period.
And that's the key point, Jonathan. These payments were through COGS; they weren't a reduction to revenue.
No, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Because if it's something that you're not going to do anymore, I mean, you called out the impairment charges. I'm trying to just understand if there was a material payment made out in this third quarter that I'm probably not going to see.
Incremental dilution of margin because of that. Pricing going forward will help improve that, but there's some other expected sort of cost of goods pressures that we're going to face going forward. So, we're going to need to model all that out in our budget process.
Yep.
Hopefully by the full year we'll be able to give you a better sense of that.
Yep, no worries. Thank you.
Sure.
Hi, everyone. Look, we're running a bit short of time here. I can see there are a few other questions that have been queued. So what we'll do, we'll get back to those people individually through the course of the day. I'll just probably hand over to David just for a couple of last closing remarks.
Thanks, David. Well, thanks for your questions. I know this is a lot of information to digest for our investors and the analyst community, but I hope you appreciate the additional transparency that we've been able to give you in relation to our current situation, the actions that we're taking and the plans going forward. So anyway, I look forward to connecting with many of you over the course of this week to answer any further questions that you have. So thanks very much for participating in the call today. Cheers.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.